Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Final contestant on The Restaurant on TV3 was the broadcaster Anton Savage, and this series ended on a note of extreme deliciousness with another 5-star review. Anton, good afternoon.
Sean, how are you?
Not too bad, and congratulations. The second 5 stars in the series.
Thank you very much. I'm as pleased as I was surprised.
Were you though? Because you seem to know your stuff. And especially the starter, which, and for people who didn't see it last night, bones on toast, doesn't sound very delicious, but it's like a fancy specialist meal from a London restaurant.
Yeah, there's actually a very interesting guy. There's a chef, Fergus, second name will come to me. He runs St. John's over in London. And he was, back in the 90s, he got into this thing of sort of whole food cooking. And he does this thing where he peels, it's kind of like Silence of the Lambs. He peels an entire pig's face and then stuffs it with other bits of pig and bakes it. And he does deep fried pig's tail. So literally everything from nose to anus he cooks. And one of the things that he does is this bone marrow dish. But the thing about the bone marrow dish is it looks fancy. Not into it. You get your butcher to chop bones into little bits, bang them in the oven for 15 minutes and you put it on a plate. So it has that nice advantage of looking fancy when you put it out, but doesn't require any talent.
And what does bone marrow taste like?
It's very, very good. It's genuinely very good. It's kind of like a beef pate. It's like a warm beef pate. And when if you put it on a sour toast like that we did in the restaurant, bit of sourdough toast, bit of salt, it is delicious. It looks awful. It sounds horrendous. But genuinely, it's really, really good.
Yeah, and
dead easy to do.
Yeah, and because the judges recognised it, at least, as being from St. John's.
Yes.
The other diners, though, was there kind of a bit of a mixed reaction there?
Well,
On
the St. John's thing, I have to give a bit of credit, because one of the things that when I do it at home, if you imagine at the length of a bone, the way we did it last night was it was cut in three sort of cylindrical, almost like sort of Swiss roll sections. The way that I would tend to do it is I get it split lengthways. Because it's a hell of a lot easier. You just roast the whole long bone, then you can scoop it out of the middle like a little canoe full of bone marrow. But it was Gary O'Hanlon who said, well, look, if we're going to do it this way, let's do the St. John's version of the dish. Let's make it as classic as possible. And I was amazed to see Tom Durley and Marco immediately go, oh yeah, that's the St. John's marrow bone. The rest of the diners, there was a big debate going, is this actually bones?
Yes.
we're not getting off our bones, are we? And then I think the way it works in the restaurant is, somebody has to order the shagging thing.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be somebody in the diner. So I think there was sort of half the restaurant who were told, tough luck, lads.
That's what you're getting.
You're eating bones.
And so was that a dish that you ate there and then you made it your business to go and learn how to make it?
No, I don't really cook. I kind of do self-indulgent science experiments with food. So I got into big chunky bits of meat roasted over extended periods of time. So I was doing things like briskets and I was doing things like St. Louis cut ribs and all this kind of stuff that you can spend 6 hours and you can put a lot of probes into it and all that kind of stuff. And that got me on a bit of a jag of what's the more obscure stuff I can do. So I went to Beef Cheek and I happened to live beside a really, really good butcher's, which is around the corner from you, I think, as well. And they have all this stuff in stock. And then I thought, I wonder about bone marrow. Because it's not one of those things you saw. I went in and said, lads, can I have some bones? And I started doing it at home. And it was only kicking it up to the St. John's was Gary's idea. But I think it was a good one.
Yeah. So you spend a fair amount of time cooking then, from the sounds of that.
But it really is more science. It genuinely is more science experiment. Like I did a Christmas dinner a couple of years ago, and a friend of mine came into the house, looked in the oven and went, holy Jesus, it looks like the control unit of a nuclear submarine, because there was thermometers stuck in the chicken and there was wires coming out of the oven. So I like that kind of stuff where you can spend 8 hours and have probes.
But
making a Bearnaise, life is too short.
One of your desserts as well, key lime pie.
Yes.
Had you ever actually made key lime pie before with actual key limes? Because it seems as if there'd been a huge amount of hassle to get anyone to get their hands on any.
They're tricky enough, but I'm fortunate in that I have friends out in Florida. And whenever I'm out there, one of the things that you can do is you can get key limes because they're from there. It is the easiest thing in the world to make. It looks fancy, but there is nothing to it. It is barely more complicated. You know the classic Philadelphia cheesecake where you smash up biscuits and spread sweet cheese on? It's that, only with a fancier name. So that was the one that did worry me. I thought, no, they're not going to wear this. It's not going to be fancy enough for them. And I was amazed because Marco in particular was all over. Can I tell you the secret about the desserts?
Yes.
Okay, the bit that isn't in last night's episode, which is my favourite thing of the whole thing. I think timing-wise, they couldn't swing it. I couldn't figure what to do for a posh dessert because I don't cook posh desserts.
Mm.
So I talked to a friend of mine and I said, have you done any posh desserts that you think would work? And he said, there's a passion fruit sorbet, passion fruit souffle. It's excellent. I'll give you the recipe. I said, great. Pitched it to the guys in the restaurant. They agreed. That's fine. So now I'm tied to this passion fruit sorbet, passion fruit souffle. He gives me the recipe book and it's Marco Pierre White, passion fruit souffle and passion fruit sorbet. So I'm looking at it going, you son of a... I now have to feed Marco his own food. So all day, and we have the book in and we're doing it, and it's one of these, oh, you're kidding, we have to milk 50 passion fruits to reduce it down to this tiny syrup.
Oh,
and that's for one. So we eventually get the thing cooked, all the rest of it, and it goes out to the judges, and they didn't show it, but you can see there's a reaction shot of me, which I'm looking slightly baffled, and it's because Marco turns around and he says, I have to say to you, I've always thought that souffle should be married with ice cream, not with sorbet. I think that was a mistake. I'm looking, going, page 180, your book.
Well, actually, on the key lime,
yeah,
there was, as you know, great difficulty locating a key lime, and in the end, Louise found a kind of concentrate. Now, I was told that there was a bit of a panicky ringing around Dublin to try and even find something like that. I won't say who they phoned up, but they phoned up one producer of food that made a kind of a key lime food, and said, do you have key limes or do you have concentrate? And the answer they got was, well, not really. But to be honest with you, you'll get away with it because Irish people don't know what key lime tastes like.
Well, that's the thing that I, like, again, you're probably used to it because you see all the episodes and have done for years. But the bit that it's amazing to watch is those guys cooking, like watching Gary and Stephen and Louise, when they actually get into it and the speed at which they'll taste something and say it's right or wrong. Because like that on the key lime, because it changed the recipe by using that kind of distillation, they're all tasting it. And I'm still stuck at, I like it. Yeah. They're going, no, slightly too bitter, a little more sour. Really, really impressive to watch.
Yeah, and was that a shock to the system for you, the comparison between being at home with your science experiment and doing dozens of covers for people and churning it out?
There's an old line that a friend of mine used to have that I thought was very good, where he said that the difference between an amateur and a professional is an amateur can be quite good. A professional can be quite good right now.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. It's one thing to say, here you are, I have cooked you, Sean, a piece of Dover sole. It's another to say 25 of them, all the same, bang them out, one after another, another. And it's just to be around the guys when they're doing that. It, first of all, it's very impressive and you learn a lot. But secondly, you go, doesn't matter how many cookery programs you watch, doesn't matter how handy you think you are, there's just a chasm of difference between guys like Gary and Stephen and Louise versus even the best of home chefs.
Why is Dover sole so expensive?
I don't know, but that was the main reason why I decided to put it on somebody else's menu.
It was the most expensive one they've ever done.
I think Dover sole is a weird little lad. I don't know if you're familiar, but maybe I have this biologically wrong, but my understanding is Dover sole, like all flatfish, is born with an eye on either side of his head, right? And for the first couple of months of his life, he swims around like a normal fish. Then one eye migrates across his forehead to the other side of his head and he lies down sideways, right? Once he lies down sideways, he's pretty much parked. And he swims sideways like a magic carpet. I think that's why he's expensive, because he spends so much time buried on the bottom that you can't get him in nets. So he tends to get missed in trawls, slightly rare fish, but he is delicious. And the ones that they got were giant. Like they were
enormous.
There must have been a couple of hundred quid's worth of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is nice because I wasn't paying for it.
Yeah. Since, you know, the dramas of a few months ago, how have you been getting on?
Bank balance isn't what it once was, but, you know, these things happen. Yeah. Good.
That's very philosophical.
Thanks.
Were you angry then? Or have you got over that?
No, it's a gig. I mean, these things happen. You get to a position where you realise there's a divergent set of views here which are unlikely to converge and we both move on happily.
Yeah. Are you going to return to broadcasting or is it too early to say yet?
If you have even the tiniest whiff of a gig, Sean, 15% off the top straight to you. I've been sitting outside Montrose with a big cardboard sign saying we'll broadcast for food.
We'll fish for Dover sole for gigs. Anton Savage, thanks a million for coming in to us.
Thanks, Sean.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank? Having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.